chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, and no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest my cab in the middle of it. Rest my cab in the middle. We are. Rest my cab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got quite a bit going this afternoon, this week. We had not only had the impeachment, but we had the State of the Union address, and then we had a special meeting that President Trump convened in the White House afterwards. And it was sort of a pep rally for all the people that helped him and defended him against these impeachment charges. But first, we're going to start off this first 16-minute clip, and I edited just the introduction off of it a little bit to shorten it a little bit. But the main speech is there. It's Secretary of State Pompeo, and he's addressing his speech is being presented to the National Governors Association, and that's today, February 8th, 2020. So this is something right off the press, and it's a very important speech about the danger that China still poses to us, even in the midst of this coronavirus pandemic that's taking place in China and in the world. So listen to Pompeo, Secretary Pompeo, carefully, because it's a very important speech. So here we go now with this speech.
Last year I received an invitation to an event that promised to be, quote, an occasion for exclusive deal-making. It said, quote, the opportunities for mutually beneficial economic development between China and our individual states are tremendous, end of quote. Deal-making sounds like it might have come from President Trump, but the invitation was actually from a former governor. I was being invited to the U.S.-China Governors Collaboration Summit. It was an event co-hosted by the National Governors Association and something called the Chinese People's Association for Friendship and Foreign Countries. Sounds pretty harmless. What the invitation did not say is that the group I just mentioned, is the public face of the Chinese Communist Party's official foreign influence agency, the United Front Work Department. Now, I was lucky. I was familiar with that organization from my time as the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, but it got me thinking. How many of you made the link between that group and Chinese Communist Party officials? What if you made a new friend while you were at that event? What if your new friend asked you for introductions to other politically connected and powerful people? What if your new friend offered to invest big money in your state, perhaps in your pension, in industries sensitive to our national security? These aren't hypotheticals. These scenarios are all too true, and they impact American foreign policy significantly. Indeed, last year, a Chinese government-backed think tank in Beijing produced a report that assessed all 50 of America's governors on their attitudes towards China. They labeled each of you friendly, hardline, or ambiguous. I'll let you decide where you think you belong. Someone in China already has. Many of you, indeed, in that report are referenced by name. So here's the lesson. The lesson is that competition with China is not just a federal issue. It's why I wanted to be here today, Governor Hogan. It's happening in your states with consequences for our foreign policy, for the citizens that reside in your states, and indeed for each of you. And in fact, whether you're viewed by the CCP as friendly or hardline, know that it's working you. Know that it's working the team around you. Competition with China is happening inside of your state, and it affects our capacity to perform America's vital national security functions. I want to set the context today for this topic. At the end of the Cold War, America started to engage with China heavily. It made good sense. We thought that the more we interacted, the more it would become like a liberal democracy, like us here in the United States. It didn't happen. And you all know this. Indeed, under Xi Jinping, the country is moving exactly in the opposite direction. More repression, more unfair competition, more predatory economic practices, indeed a more aggressive military posture as well. Now, you should know, this doesn't mean we can't do business with China. I had an operation when I ran Century International. We had a small office in Shanghai. We can find places to cooperate when our interests converge. You can see that in the first part of the trade deal that President Trump got done, signed last month. We're happy about that. It was the right thing to do. That was indeed a deal that was good for both the United States and China. And these economic ties are powerful. They're important and good. They're good for your state. They're good for America. Look at the nearly 18 tons of medical supplies the United States just flew to China this past week to help fight the coronavirus. Yesterday, we announced more than $100 million in assistance to China and the countries that are affected by that virus. And on that note, too, I want to take just a moment to note I want to send my condolences to the loved ones of the United States citizen who fell victim to the coronavirus in Wuhan over the last days. But while there are places we can cooperate, we can't ignore China's actions and strategic intentions. If we do, we risk the important components of our relationships that benefit both countries. The Chinese government has been methodical in the way it's analyzed our system, our very open system, one that we're deeply proud of. It's assessed our vulnerabilities, and it's decided to exploit our freedoms to gain advantage over us at the federal level, the state level, and the local level. Last year, I announced that I would give a series of speeches on China, and this is part of that. It's the context in which state and local government officials ought to think about the way they lead with respect to our relationship. It's important. China matters. It's been part of my mission at the State Department to mobilize all parts of the United States government. I was out in Silicon Valley a couple of weeks ago to talk to America's leading tech companies about this very set of issues. And I need your help, too. What China does in Topeka and Sacramento reverberates in Washington and Beijing and far beyond. Competition with China is happening. It's happening in your state. In fact, I'd be surprised if most of you in the audience have not been lobbied by the Chinese Communist Party directly. Chinese Communist Party friendship organizations like the one that I referenced earlier are in Richmond, Minneapolis, Portland, Jupiter, Florida, and many other cities around the country. But sometimes China's activities aren't quite that public, and I want to talk about some of that today. Let me read you an excerpt of a letter from a Chinese diplomat. It was China's consul general in New York, sent a letter last month to the speaker of one of your state legislatures. Here's what the letter said in part. It said, quote, "As we all know, Taiwan is part of China. Avoid engaging in any official contact with Taiwan, including sending congratulatory messages to the electeds, introducing bills and proclamations for the election, sending officials and representatives to attend the inauguration ceremony, and inviting officials in Taiwan to visit the United States." End of quote from the letter. Think about that. You add a diplomat from China assigned here to the United States, a representative of the Chinese Communist Party in the New York City, sending an official letter urging that an American elected official shouldn't exercise his right to freedom of speech. Let that sink in for just a minute. And this isn't a one-off event. It's happening all across the country. Chinese consulates in New York, in Illinois, in Texas, and two in California, bound by the diplomatic responsibilities and rights of the Vienna Convention, are very politically active at the state level, as is the embassy right here in Washington, D.C. Maybe some of you have heard about the time when the Chinese consulate paid the UC San Diego students to protest the Dalai Lama. Or last August, when a former governor, Phil Bryant of Mississippi, received a letter from a diplomat in the council's office in Houston threatening to cancel a Chinese investment if the governor chose to travel to Taiwan. Phil went anyway. Last year, a high school in Chicago disinvited a Taiwanese representative to serve on a climate panel after Chinese pressure. You know, it's one thing to pressure the Secretary of State of the United States of America. It seems quite something else to go after a high school principal. It shows depth. It shows systematization. It shows intent. Chinese Communist Party officials, too, are cultivating relationships with county school board members and local politicians, often through what are known as sister cities programs. Look, this Chinese competition is something you all know. It sits in the back of your mind, but you have many duties, and you are busy people. But this competition is well underway, and while these might seem like local matters to some, the cumulative effect is of enormous national importance and international significance. Of course, too, our public educational institutions are another arena of competition with China. Now, I know, governors, you don't run these institutions on a day-to-day basis, but you often have impact on the people that do. The FBI director, and I think the attorney general, too, talked yesterday about something called the Thousand Talents Plan. It's a plan to recruit scientists and professors to transfer the know-how we have here to China in exchange for enormous paydays. The program's probably targeted campuses in your state. Indeed, the Department of Justice has indicted professors in my home state at the University of Kansas and at Virginia Tech and at Harvard. A Texas A&M investigation reportedly discovered more than 100 academics participating in Chinese talent recruitment plans. Only 5 of them had declared that they were participating in this program. And goodness knows what else we've not discovered. There are indeed very credible reports of Chinese government officials pressuring Chinese students, students studying right here in the United States of America, to monitor fellow Chinese students and to report back to Beijing. One very prominent pro-democracy Chinese student on a college campus in the Northeast last year received death threats. Death threats for exercising his right to free speech. The FBI became involved. Make no mistake about it. We want talented young Chinese students to come study in the United States of America. I see it at Wichita State University. These are wonderful young people. We ought to encourage them to be here. But they shouldn't have to fear the long arm of Beijing, which often reaches out via groups like the Chinese Students and Scholars Association. Look, that's just one of many campus groups directly influenced by the Chinese Communist Party and its representatives right here in the United States. Many of you are familiar with Confucius Institutes. Confucius Institutes purport to have the sole purpose of teaching Mandarin language skills and Chinese culture. A bipartisan Senate committee found last year in 2019 that the Chinese Communist Party controls nearly every aspect of the Confucius Institute's activities here in the United States. Over the past few months, the University of Missouri, the University of Kansas, the University of Maryland have independently decided to close down their Confucius Institutes after conducting their own reviews. And schools in 22 other states are doing or have already done the same. Sadly, China's propaganda campaign starts even earlier than college. China has targeted K-12 schools through its Confucius Classrooms, the CCP's program, to influence kids in elementary, middle, and high schools around the world. Do you know that we have no ability to establish similar programs in China? I'm sure that doesn't surprise you. President Trump's talked about reciprocity in trade. We should have reciprocity in all things. Today, they have free rein in our system, and we're completely shut out from theirs. As of 2017, there were 519 of these classrooms in the United States. Beijing knows that today's kids are tomorrow's leaders. The China competition is happening. It's happening in your states, and it's a competition that goes to the very basic freedoms that every one of us values. And when it comes to doing business, I'm asking you to adopt a cautious mindset. In the words of President Reagan, when you're approached for an introduction or a connection to a deal, trust but verify. I know you all have power over pension funds or the people that run them. As of its latest public filing, the Florida retirement system is invested in a company that in turn is invested in surveillance gear that the Chinese Communist Party uses to track more than 1 million Muslim minorities. California's pension fund, the largest public pension fund in the country, is invested in companies that supply the People's Liberation Army that puts our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines at risk. And as the case for many Chinese companies too, no Sarbanes-Oxley. Their books are not wide open. So it's difficult to know if the transaction that's being engaged in is transparent and fair and follows the rule of law. Now, all of these things may well be legal, but the question is, do they demonstrate good judgment and preserve America's national security? I want to urge vigilance on the local level, too. In the District of Columbia, there have been concerns raised that the new metro cars manufactured by China could be vulnerable to cyber threats. So again, it's worth trusting but verifying there are federal officials prepared to help you work your way through these challenges when they arise. Don't make separate individual deals and agreements with China that undermine our national policy. I know none of you would do so intentionally. Let us help you make sure we're getting it right. We're here to help. The Trump administration wants to help. There are so many things we have already done. Last year, we issued a letter to state governments. It reaffirmed that Taiwan remains a key business partner and a friend in every other way. We've strengthened the review process for Chinese companies that are investing in your states. We've revoked visas for so-called research scholars who abused their privileges by teaching at Confucius classrooms and made sure that they departed the United States. We've banned scientists from the Department of Energy, which oversees America's 17 largest labs, including our nuclear research facility in New Mexico. We did so because they are participating in Chinese talent recruitment programs. We've directed two Chinese propaganda outlets, the Chinese Global Television Network and Xinhua News Agency, to register as foreign agents. And we at the State Department have started to require Chinese diplomats to comply with the same rules we comply with when we're in China. Chinese diplomats now must notify the State Department in advance of official meetings with state and local officials. They must declare their official visits to U.S. educational and research institutions as well. This is just fairness, reciprocity, basic common sense. This is not an onerous restriction to put on China. Look, I know it's 2:30 on a Saturday afternoon. There were lots of good things we could do. I hope you will all take on board what I've said today. You all have important missions leading your states. These are complex, difficult jobs. You have the task to create jobs and opportunity in your state for your people and attract human capital investment that undergirds our prosperity. It's a tough job. And you get curveballs every day from all across the place. But don't lose sight of the competition from China that's already present in your state. Let's all rise to the occasion and protect our security, our economy, indeed all that we hold dear, all of those freedoms. It's what leaders must do. It's what we do as Americans. I hope God will bless each and every one of you, each of your states in the United States of America. Thank you for letting me be with you here this afternoon.
What follows next is Diana West, and it's an excerpt at the beginning of a discussion about her new book, The Red Thread, but also it's a general discussion about the infiltration of the communist movement over this, you could say, during the 20th century into this century, and even before that, and some of the early beginnings of the communist, the United States communist, American communist movement, and the infiltration. But this is very, very interesting, and this will give some credence to what we're dealing with now. They give a warning to the insider, the enemies within, and this is very, very dangerously happening in this country today, and Diana West is a very stand-up lady. So here we go with about the first 6 minutes, 10 minutes of this presentation It was a panel discussion, but it's very, very important. Here we go now.
Welcome to the Bill Walton Show. The anti-Trump conspiracy is not about Democrats versus Republicans. It's not about the ebb and flow of political power lawfully and peacefully transferred. It is about globalist versus nationalist, and they are locked in the old and continuous communist versus anti-communist struggle and fighting to the end whether we, the anti-communists, recognize it or not. So writes Diana West, the award-winning author of The Red Thread, A Search for Ideological Drivers Inside the Anti-Trump Conspiracy, and one of my guests on today's show. It's a stark claim and ominous, and if true, demands that we look at the Trump impeachment in a whole new light. Joining in to explore it is Frank Gaffney, Assistant Secretary of Defense under President Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy, and Vice Chairman of the Committee for the Present Danger. Diana, Frank? Diana, you've also written eloquently about the struggle that's been going on for over a century. You wrote about it in The American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character, traces the roots of what's happening today. Let's start with that.
Yes, it's a good place to start because the red thread in what's happening to President Trump is directly related to this century-long struggle that you refer to. We have been subject to infiltration, to subversion, to people who want to take advantage of our liberty to essentially subvert the constitutional republic that we were endowed with. And when you start trying to peel it back and understand, well, why would this be going on? Why would we be in this struggle right now with impeachment over, you know, trumped up charges, no pun intended? It's not really about this week's headlines or last month's headlines or even the 2016 election. It does go back to the direction that a number of generations, I believe, have been able to take this country in away from its constitutional roots and turn it toward the globalist trend, toward the movement toward a place where nations dissolve and elites rise up and take power and citizens become subjects. And this, of course, doesn't happen overnight. It seems that way because we see in Donald Trump a catalyst for a reaction that has brought these people out into the light, has brought this, what many of us, Frank Gaffney included, we've talked about it all the time, call a coup being staged all around Washington in various venues, now in the Congress. And Donald Trump, I will just throw back at you, is the catalyst because he is a counter-revolutionary figure, namely innately anti-communist, a nation builder. The nation is the bulwark of defense against globalism, the nation state. And when you see a candidate come up who has an agenda of restoring the nation, you realize that these people are rising up in reaction against that.
So the ideological roots are communism, Marxism.
Yes.
And the drivers of the infiltration, you believe that started as early as the 20s when Lenin and then Stalin took over Russia.
Well, even before that, because Lenin and Stalin would be the revolutionary aspect, but you do see Marxism coming into the country in the 19th century, of course, after the 1848ers
Was there a link between Marxism and early progressivism?
Absolutely.
Because that's, I think, about 1880s. You know, the modern textbooks now date American history from 1880 when the progressives
came into it.
What's that?
That's when everything began.
Right, everything began.
Everything began.
Frank? All that prelude was, white supremacist, slaveholding people who are nothing but a distraction and an embarrassment. The real America began with the progressive movement in the late 80s. But the point is that, and Diana has done such a service to the country, I really believe, in laying this out, because if you don't understand this enemy within phenomenon and the fact that there always are enemies within, And in particular, the more open, the more free the society, the more they're able to operate almost in the open, effectively.
Well, that's an interesting observation coming from you, because you're famous for fighting Russia and radical Islam, and now with Committee for Present Danger, China. And so that's an external enemy, but I guess what you're saying, they're fighting the war on an inside front.
Stealth.
What I'm basically saying is that whichever of the isms we decide to assign to the particular phase, we're dealing with basically totalitarianism. And the totalitarians have as part of their tradecraft operating subversively, as Dinah says, inside the enemy camp, because it invariably makes easier the job of trying to dominate that enemy from the outside. And what's doubly painful about this, as we really try to understand what's afoot, is how successfully the totalitarians have disabled what might be thought of as our antibodies to these kinds of
foreign. Who are the personalities associated with? You mentioned somebody, Wirt. Is there a story there?
There's a great story there, which is very important point to start with, because I think he is the first American to be essentially destroyed by the media. So he is a figure worth looking back to.
This would be in the 30s?
This would be in the 30s.
Yeah.
And William Wirt was probably a progressive, actually. He was an educator from Indiana. And he
must have been a great guy.
It must have been a great guy. And he had a lot of friends who in Washington. And he came when Franklin Roosevelt came to town with the New Deal. And he came to town and was given a dinner and at the home of his former secretary, who now was working in, at the time, an education office. There wasn't a Department of Education. And they had this dinner with other New Dealers, mid-level people, a correspondent from the Soviet news agency TASS as well, an American. And he heard revolution being discussed. He heard that Roosevelt was actually going to be overthrown, that this was a way to overthrow the nation of Washington and Lincoln and start anew and essentially have a Russian revolution here in this New Deal period. And what's interesting about Wirt is he was terribly upset, and he sought to tell the newspapers. He sought to tell any famous person he could. He wrote scores of letters to every famous person in America he could think of, got nowhere until a businessman actually took him up on it and was going through the revolutionary Roosevelt program in business at that point. And was
this would be
1933, 34. And he read William Wirt's testimony about this dinner into the congressional record, and all hell broke loose. And we had the equivalent of a 24/7 news cycle back in the day when we were still doing telegraph and newspapers and radio hookup was new. They had to have hearings and find out what was their revolution inside the New Deal. And essentially what we learned about it later, very similar to the Trump impeachment inquiry, you had a frame-up of William Wirt by all of the guests at the dinner party, by the three Democrats who ran this select committee with two Republicans to hear these charges, and they essentially portrayed him as a liar who had been talking nonsensically all night, and the media made fun of him. President Roosevelt made fun of him. I mean, his name was famous for a while as this kook, and worse.
Yeah, they said that he was drinking and he talked all night, and we didn't say anything. And they not only said he was wrong, they said
gaslighting.
He was a bad guy.
I think it's a technical term for it.
And the story went away, but the kicker was that one of those three Democrats was a man that Roosevelt actually got out of office later on because he was against Roosevelt's court packing scheme. John J. O'Connor was his name, from New York. He actually wrote a mea culpa and published it in the newspapers of the day, and he apologized to the then deceased William Wirt and admitted how they had set their story straight, how they had essentially railroaded him to make the story go away.
It's like Donovan, where do I get my reputation back?
It's unbelievable. But the kicker also is that at this very moment, William Wirt was trying to tell the country about the revolutionary nature of the New Dealers. You had Whitaker Chambers coming to town. Hmm. in order to organize secretly with his Soviet handler at his side the cells inside the federal government that later became so famous for all of the harm they did. And the first person he met in Washington was Alger Hiss.
Wow. Alger Hiss is concluded that he was a communist agent, and he had penetrated our government at a very high level. The Venona intercepts, which were set up by the Army Security Agency beginning in 1945, and by 1947 they had begun to break some of the codes of the KGB and their spies in America. The Rosenbergs were uncovered during this operation, so the ASA was instrumental in uncovering that. I'll have up on thesecrettruth.com, I'll have a click off on the Venona list and a little bit of background on the Venona project itself. But it was a very, very important project that uncovered a lot of communists operating in the United States at the time, in the 50s especially. But next we're going to come up with, we get back to current events now, and we're going to be bringing in some of comments made by Hannity and others, Scalise, Representative Scalise, and others, about this ongoing, you know, we just got over this impeachment. They found him, they acquitted him, and then there was before that, the day before they acquitted Trump, there was the State of the Union address. Then we had the impeachment acquittal, and then after that he had sort of a rally in the White House among his supporters and all his defenders and his attorneys and so forth. That was very, very insightful. But first we're going to play a clip of Hannity. He sort of lays out some of the current problems that we've had during this hellacious period. Here we go now.
And welcome to Hannity Tonight. We are at the end of what has been a decisive week of wins for President Donald Trump. In the span of just a few short days, the president delivered the most powerful State of the Union address I have witnessed in my adult lifetime. And oh yeah, the impeachment witch hunt totally implodes. The president exonerated forever Petty Pelosi, while her months of this long charade culminating in what was a pathetic, nationally televised, petulant temper tantrum. Look at your screen. This is what the modern radical Democratic Party has achieved in 3+ years with their nonstop rage, resistance, their witch hunts, conspiracy theories, and lies. A few ripped up pieces of paper, and that's it. Now, Petty Pelosi, well, she's not exactly a master strategist. You can see, and we witnessed this week, she is an angry, bitter, mumbling, bumbling, sore loser, and likely will, in fact, go down in history as the worst Speaker of House that we have ever seen. One thing is a certainty tonight. We can say this. Her days as Speaker are now numbered. And once again, we were right all along, and the media mob were, as usual, wrong again, raising the hopes, the expectations of their dwindling audiences, yet again, only to disappoint them yet again with more fake news. Now, of course, this impeachment charade, the Schumer Schiff sham show, would end in utter failure. But they were raising the expectations of their, well, small audience viewers. Another huge loser in all of this, well, that would be quid and pro and quo Joe, and his zero experience on Hunter was being paid millions. Now, despite the attempted hypocritical double standard cover up by the Democrats and their allies and the media mob, we on this program were correct. We told you the truth. Joe, Hunter, guess what? They engaged in nothing short of what was a shady, sleazy, and yeah, we believe criminal, potentially illegal behavior in the country of Ukraine. We were also correct that Ukraine interfered in the 2016 elections to help Hillary Clinton. Don't believe me? Let's look at the January 11, 2017 investigative report in Politico. And by the way, that conclusion also came about election interference by Ukraine, separate and apart from Russia, from a Ukrainian court. Just like when we were correct in reporting that high-ranking government officials abused their power and committed FISA abuse. We were right that the Trump campaign was illegally spied on by members of an opposing party at the height of the election, with deep state operatives behind almost all of it. We were correct that Hillary Clinton, yep, Russian interference. She bought and paid for the dirty, unverifiable Russian dossier. We now know full of a pack of lies. In other words, it was Russian propaganda used by the Democrats. Even the New York Times finally got the picture, and they pointed out, we now have reason to believe, as they said, it was likely Russian disinformation all along. Make no mistake, we were right about the deep state, which was chock full of Trump-hating Obama holdovers. Two of these anti-Trump bureaucrats were removed from the White House, thankfully, earlier today. Both Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman and his twin brother, they were escorted out of the White House complex. Good for the president. And you might remember Lieutenant Colonel Vindman was trashing the president during his testimony in the House and rebuked the administration's policy in Ukraine. Mr. Vindman, if you want to be in charge of foreign policy, why don't you try and run for president? Then we find out his twin brother was assigned to the office that was vetting publications from government employees, like John Bolton's book. Although at this time, we don't have the evidence that he handled the Bolton book, but I have my suspicions. It is clear President Trump is draining the swamp, and this is what it looks like, and for good reason. We have been right every step of the way. The media mob has been wrong. Nothing we have reported has even remotely been disproven. We now have the Inspector General, that's Horowitz's report, vindicating the reporting we've done for almost three straight years on this program. Doesn't seem to matter to the radical Democratic Party and their co-conspirators, state-run media mob. But that doesn't matter to the radical Democratic Party either in any way. They don't care about the truth. They all live in this bubble. They never question their own narratives. They never listen to opposing viewpoints. Most of them don't even probably have conservative friends. They hate this show, but thank you for making us number one. We want to live up to your expectations every day. And telling you the truth matters to us. Getting the facts matters to us. But to our, well, colleagues in the media, they don't seem to care. And we know that they frequently mistake their own far-left opinions as undisputed facts. And they actually say in their own heads they're journalists. They're not journalists in any way, shape, matter, or form. They're blindsided by all their failures and their prejudices and political points of view. This impeachment sham is but the latest example. And by the way, it was never going to be successful. And today, the president pointed out the charade is now completely and totally and utterly dead and meaningless. Take a look.
They should, because it was a hoax. That's a very good question. Should they expunge the impeachment in the House? They should, because it was a hoax. It was a total political hoax.
Yep, this latest impeachment hoax might now be in the rearview mirror, but the lying, the smears, the besmirchment, the conspiracy theories, they never end. Just today, the president scored a massive victory in the courts. We have a three-judge panel unanimously throwing out a frivolous lawsuit brought by more than 200 Democratic members of Congress. They lost again. The president's not sick of winning. The suit alleged the president was improperly profiting from his time in the White House. He actually loses money by working in the White House. But the court ruled lawmakers didn't have any legal standing to proceed with their claims. And meanwhile, rage-filled, delusional Democratic lawmakers are now pressing forward with a variety of frivolous investigations, more investigations, endless investigations, more conspiracy theories, more talk already of impeachment against the president. A brand new effort to subpoena John Bolton. Here we go again. This is not over. Now, there is one way I have figured out that you can end all of this. The nonstop lying, the smearing, the slander, the besmirchment, conspiracy theories, witch hunts, the hoax. There's one way you can do it. In 270 days, you will be the ultimate jury. And by the way, you don't ever have to waste your time watching any fake news in the future. You can just tune them out, like most people are. The way to stop this from ever happening again and continuing, in 270 days, you will be the ultimate jury. You get to take back control of your country. Now, if you like President Trump and you'd like to see him be able to work with a little bit of peace and not having these constant, you know, threats hanging over his head 24 hours a day, every day of the week, well, when you vote for him, you might want to vote for Republican congressmen and Republican senators. Do the do-nothing Democrats, do you really think they deserve your trust? And by the way, it's now more clear than ever that the Trump agenda, as we saw on Tuesday night, a massive success. Despite the never-ending, nonstop radical resistance, our economy is breaking record after record and booming. January jobs numbers, get that. It beat all expectations yet again. A whopping 225,000 new jobs added. Even the New York Times, they were forced to admit wages for African Americans is on the rise after a decade of stagnation. That would be under Biden Obama. Today, President Trump celebrated America's undeniable economic success. Let's take a look.
This morning, the brand new jobs numbers came in. We smashed expectations and created 225,000 new jobs last month. 225,000. They were thinking maybe 100, maybe 105. I was watching all the geniuses this morning on television. What do you think it's going to be? It's going to be 110. 225, pretty good, right? 225,000 for last month. That's only last month.
That's 225,000 new jobs for our American family. How great is that? A booming economy, only one part of the successful Trump agenda. We'll scroll it for you. Take a look. We've been the only show on TV, apparently, that ever does it. But also under this commander-in-chief, the ISIS caliphate has been destroyed, utterly decimated. Oh, ISIS leader al-Baghdadi and his top lieutenants, they're all dead. Iran's top terrorist, their number one state sponsor of terror, led by this guy Soleimani, he's dead too. And now the White House has confirmed that al-Qaeda's top leader in Yemen was killed in a U.S. airstrike ordered by President Trump. Over the past 3 years, this president has been an effective leader by every measure. The State of the Union, well, is remarkably strong. And the same cannot be said for the Democratic Party. Well, look at their very first caucus, an utter, complete disaster. You want to entrust the government to them? They couldn't even run a caucus in Iowa. It has taken them the entire week to count a few thousand votes, and the results are still riddled with errors and inconsistencies, and nobody believes them anyway. Meanwhile, a multi-front civil war is erupting inside the Democratic Party. This is getting entertaining. According to a Politico report, Elizabeth Warren supporters, they are now accusing Mayor Pete Buttigieg of white male privilege for declaring victory in Iowa. And both Warren and Mayor Pete, they're losing to socialist Bernie Sanders in a new Morning Consult poll. And, of course, the DNC is now looking for new ways, well, to rig the primary election against Bernie. Yet again, remember Donna Brazile? She made the phone call. She was upset. She didn't want to make it. Yeah, they rigged it against Bernie the first time. Now it looks like they're trying to do it again. His campaign is accusing the Democratic Party of changing the rules, which they did, to allow Mike Bloomberg into future debates without meeting fundraising requirements, you know, like 250,000 unique donors. Bloomberg, worth an estimated $55 billion, well, he's planning on spending more than $1 billion to buy the Democratic nomination. Now, his campaign is facing today, you can't make this up, plagiarism charges. Matter of fact, 8 separate instances. The Intercept first reported that passages in at least 8 of Bloomberg's policy proposals were directly copied from various media outlets, including fake news, CNN, Time Magazine, CBS. Of course, he'd be in alignment with the most liberal news organizations in the country. I guess there's one thing money doesn't buy, and that's honesty. And I guess he just figures, well, I'll just take what they have. I don't know what I really believe. I'll say whatever I need to say. If I were a Democratic voter, I think I'd feel very discouraged about now. The party is in complete disarray. The candidates are weak. They are radical. They are uninspiring. The president's agenda is a massive success. And in 270 days, it will be the American people that will decide whether we continue peace and prosperity, and that means economic success, and that means safety and security of our country. Or do we want to turn it over to the Democrats? Well, we did have the Obama years, and we did drop $150 billion in cash and other currency on the tarmacs of mullahs in Iran that chant death to America. We did, after 8 years of Biden Obama, have 13 million more Americans on food stamps, 8 million more in poverty, and the lowest labor participation rate since the 70s. And yeah, Obama-Biden accumulated more debt than all 43 presidents before them combined. By the way, now they want to take it into a deeper socialist hellhole.
Well, quite a presentation, wasn't it? We got Rudy Giuliani coming up with Lou Dobbs right now. Boy, this is explosive stuff. Here we go.
Joining us tonight, President Trump's personal attorney, former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani. Rudy, great to have you here.
Now, to look like he's got the heck kicked out of him.
Well, he did. He and the whole bunch
like
of radical
Dems. Hospital waiting line.
You know, Adam Schiff kind of retired from, we couldn't find him anywhere.
He's probably trying to find another whistleblower. He's working on another whistleblower.
Well, that's all worked out so well for him.
Whistleblower.
Let's start with, first of all, I want to start with the president's speech last night. Because it was, your thoughts about.
Well, you know, I worked for Ronald Reagan, so right. I didn't think I'd ever see better State of the Union speeches than, remember, we were talking about Lenny.
Right.
He started the whole thing with bringing people. I was a
1982.
I was the last plane out of the airport before that plane went down. So people in my Justice Department office thought I had died on that plane. A lot of people would have preferred if I had done.
Well,
have it.
We
so
all
I,
have
very
our
close to that. And when he brought Lenny, I had to go say hello to him and right. congratulate him. But the president, you can't find anything wrong with that speech last night. It was brilliant. It was brilliant. And of course, he stayed away from the whole impeachment thing. You know, he was dying to say something about that. Stayed away from it. It was a less partisan
right.
than the Obama-Clinton speeches.
I couldn't agree more, and I'm so glad to hear you say that it was better than what Reagan.
I thought it was better than Reagan.
I didn't think
I would ever say that.
And I've heard several people today say it was Reagan-esque. And it's a high compliment, right? Yeah. The problem is, it was better than that.
It was.
And this president was saying what he meant, speaking directly to the American people, to the people that, those people who stayed sitting on their hands throughout it, once represented.
Mm-hmm.
They no longer do. They represent special interest groups. They represent various other groups, but not individuals.
I have no doubt that Ronald Reagan thought he did a great job.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I know one thing. The president has once again been exonerated. The radical Dems have been humiliated after trying to attack.
How many times has a guy,
at some point, and you're the prosecutor and legal scholar, how many times is it required that the radical Dems be schooled on American jurisprudence and the necessity of a person being guilty if you're going to go after them?
As long as we have a corrupt media, they can do it forever because they're not held accountable.
Yeah.
I think
you're right.
I am more upset about the condition of our media and how corrupt it is than I am. The Dems are going to lose. They're going to get rejected by the people. They're not going to last. I mean, all they have is impeachment. Nadler was there. He was dumbfounded. He didn't know what to say.
Yeah, he's stunned. No question.
What are they going to pass? What alternative do they have? The other thing that the president did last night was a version of Clinton's triangulation. So he took away their agenda. The poor are doing better. The minorities are doing better. The Hispanics are doing better. The women are doing better.
And he promised he would do this. Nobody can take it away from him. President Trump, as a candidate, promised the American people that all Americans would participate as he restored prosperity, and he has done it.
And how about this picture? He points out that African-American employment is the highest ever, and the Democrats who are African-American aren't important for that.
Yeah.
Like, that's not good because a Republican did it. We'd rather have the unemployment and not have Trump around.
Do you doubt it for a minute?
No, it's because they hate Trump so much.
Yeah.
And they love their country less. And they love their people less.
And somehow the national left-wing media has taken that as an acceptable rationalization. Because the left hates this president, who is succeeding on by any measure, any standard, any issue.
He's doing what they have failed at to do.
Absolutely.
Almost every American city that's been under consistent Democratic governance, and I know this as a former mayor, is in terrible shape. In terrible shape. I mean, some are catastrophes. Right. Chicago is a murder capital.
Right.
Los Angeles and San Francisco, if they don't do something about homelessness, they're going to have the plague. Yeah.
They're disintegrating. They really,
yeah, I mean,
truly
the reason we did inside plumbing was because of the plague. You can't have people living on the streets. What do you think they do on the streets?
Well,
when I was the mayor of New York City, I got rid of homelessness. And I did it to help the homeless people. I used to say, I'm doing this because if I don't engage, I don't love you. I'm going to let you stay on the street? If my brother was on the street, I would let him stay on the street. Right. I'd go get him, try to get him in a shelter, try to get him to a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a drug person.
There's been a strange...
drug rehabilitation person.
I understand. And there's been a strange suspension of responsibility in California, taking it as one example among several in this country, for enforcing laws. Now a sanctuary state, as the president pointed out last night. Suspending public health standards and assistance in too many cases.
I think you know, I started a podcast and I call it Common Sense, because I think we lack common sense.
Right.
And I think that this is a very sort of very psychological analysis, being a New Yorker for many years and understanding the liberal mindset. Yeah. They really can't govern.
Right.
They live in a fantasy world. That's why they couldn't count votes in Iowa.
Oh, my God. It goes on and on and on.
They can't govern. We're health insurance for everybody. Well, you're gonna knock out one third of our hospitals if you do that.
Right. Let me turn very quickly to the president's. He's going to address the nation tomorrow and give us his thinking. How is this battle going to be joined in the next confrontation? Where will it be? And what form will it take? You have been attacked viciously by the national left-wing media and the left as well. The president is certainly not under any illusions. I haven't asked him about it, but I'm sure he's under no illusions that this is what should be fitting into what has been a national nightmare. It may be just a concluding event.
I mean, my advice would be for the president to move on, to do what he did in the State of the Union speech, which was entirely positive, politically brilliant and entirely positive. But at the same time, keep his guard up, because they'll come after him again. They're going to come after him again. They have nothing else to run on. They have nothing else to say. And they're going to either try to relitigate all this with the bunch of liars they have. And it really is necessary that we find out who the whistleblower is.
Absolutely.
Because he may tie the whole thing together.
Very quickly. Well, you know what? We'll leave
he
it
may
right
tie
there.
The whole conspiracy
on the whistleblower.
Together.
Well, there's a lot to tie. It's a big one.
Yeah.
Rudy Giuliani, great to see you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Great job.
Coming up next is Steve Scalise and a couple of really insightful clips. Here we go now with Steve Scalise.
Bring in the House Minority Whip, Steve Scalise, Republican of Louisiana, to weigh in on this and a whole lot of other issues, State of the Union last night. Congressman, thanks for coming in.
Hey, great to be with you. Thanks.
Real quick on Doug Jones, as a Democrat, there had been hopes in your party that you'd have a quote-unquote bipartisan acquittal. Now it's down to, since he wants to vote to convict, Joe Manchin, who a few moments ago was asked how to vote, and he said three times, 4 o'clock, as in that's when the roll call vote is. He's not going to tell anyone beforehand. How important is it for the president to get at least one Democratic senator to vote to acquit?
Well, in the House, we had a bipartisan vote against impeachment. In fact, every Republican voted no, and we had Democrats that joined with us. If you're voting based on the facts, you would vote against impeachment. They never were able to identify a crime. They looked around for a crime, the Mueller investigation, for 22 months. But at the end of the day, I think this is going to be a stain on the Democrat Party, on Speaker Pelosi's speakership. They set out from day one to impeach this president. Had nothing to do with crimes. Remember, over 50 Democrats voted to impeach Donald Trump because he criticized NFL players who kneeled during the Pledge of Allegiance. That's how disgraceful this has been. They put this country through this. They've wasted, by the way, a year of their majority, not on fighting for men and women of this country like President Trump talked about last night, what President Trump's been doing to deliver for families. They've been focused on their own political power, and I think that's ultimately going to be a stain on Speaker Pelosi's legacy.
Congressman, you say that the Democrats have put the country through this, and yet we've got more breaking news. I don't know if you've heard this, but a few moments ago, Democrat Jerry Nadler told reporters that either his committee, the House Judiciary Panel, or another committee will subpoena that man, John Bolton. I wonder your reaction to why Democrats didn't do this months ago, as you've been saying, why they're doing it now on the day that the president will be acquitted. And B, doesn't this suggest that the Democrats, after the acquittal, are going to keep on investigating?
They've tipped their hat a long time ago that they are the party of impeachment. They said they might still try to impeach him even more. Again, go read multiple articles of impeachment that were filed long before the whistleblower, long before the Ukraine call. Again, 58 Democrats voted to impeach him. for criticizing NFL players who kneel during the pledge. This is all they have. They have no agenda. They don't care about the men and women of this country. They literally sat down last night when President Trump is talking about this young girl who's mm-hmm. going to get an opportunity scholarship to go to the school of her choice instead of a failing government school. That's where they are as a party. I mean, that's not where the country is, by the way. There are Democrats across the country that were looking in disgrace at what Speaker yeah. Pelosi did ripping up that speech, which contained the names of Tuskegee Airmen, of soldiers who gave their life for this country, of so many other people that are great. What makes this country great, that's what the president was celebrating, and that's what they ripped up, because they don't celebrate the success of America like President Trump does, and frankly, that's why President Trump has got such a great case to make going into the election, and they're yeah. the party of impeachment. That's all they've got.
Congressman, were you surprised as well that when Rush Limbaugh was honored, here's a man dying potentially of cancer, at least battling it. He's in the fight of his life. I get that Speaker Pelosi and other Democrats disagree with him politically, but you didn't see the speaker standing when Rush Limbaugh was honored.
And that was another disgraceful moment. Look, Rush Limbaugh inspired millions of people, still does to this day. I surely was inspired. I listened to him when I was a student at LSU, just learning about politics and government. Rush was on the radio, and he still does that today, speaking truth to power on both sides, by the way. And so the fact that President Trump celebrated him, not just for what he's done on radio, but in his battle against cancer. Rush is a tough guy. I hope he beats cancer. But everybody should have stood for that. And, yeah. and it shows, I think it makes them look little as a party when they don't do that. But the rest of the country, again, there are Democrats all across the country going, that's not where I am. Whether they agree or disagree with the president, if you can't stand up and celebrate what's great about this country, people who are battling for their lives, men and women who are giving their lives, the killing of a terrorist who murdered hundreds of servicemen and women of this country, they can't even stand for killing that terrorist. It says a lot about them.
All right. House Minority Whip Steve Scalise, we certainly appreciate you coming in. Thank you, sir.
Here we go with Steve Scalise again with Durham insights about the Durham investigation.
Yeah, Sean, you know, the president was very candid today. You know, clearly he's been focused on doing his job. But I think it was important today that he pointed out that there are some very crooked people, including some dirty cops who are still out there. That's why, you know, I agree with you on Ray, but the one I'm most interested in is the Durham report. Because, Sean, people need to be held accountable. They abuse their power to literally try to take down a candidate for president of the United States. People ought to go to jail. I've seen some classified information I can't go into, but I can say this. Hopefully Durham names names. I think the attorney general is waiting to see what comes out of that. And then hopefully they go after those people and put them in jail. Number one, to vindicate everybody else, the 99% of good people at FBI, which is such an important agency to our national security.
Well,
it's been compromised by some bad apples. They need to be held accountable.
Steve Scalise just said they need to be held accountable. Coronavirus is proceeding on an unprecedented disaster in China. We have click-offs. Come into thesecrettruth.com and we'll update all those click-offs on the coronavirus. It's got components of bat SARS, and it's got HEB components, and it's got helper components, and then it's got some other unknown stuff. But come on into our site, thesecrettruth.com, and pick up all those click-offs and so forth. Also, House Resolution 5383, it's a horrendous, draconian bill about immigration control put out by Cortez and gang and others. We want to thank you very much for listening, and God bless each and every one of you out there. We know that we're trying to save this country. We're not going to give up. We're not going to stop. So continue to do what you're doing and touch hearts and change souls. Here we go now.